Welcome to What She Said. I'm your host, Lucy Lucroft, a freelance journalist and blogger from London. Each week, I chat to awesome humans about their journey to where they are today, and we share lots of blogging tips and tricks too. You can hear the entire back catalogue, as well as new episodes wherever you listen to podcasts by searching for my name, or searching What She Said, or you can go to my website, wanderlucy.com. And if you want to come say hi online, I'm at Lucy Lucroft on Instagram or Twitter, or over at my blog, wanderlucy.com. Enjoy the show. Hello and welcome back to another episode of What She Said. This episode was really special because I got to chat to one of the bloggers that I've been fangirling over for a really, really long time, Rosie of Cider with Rosie. We talked about her beautiful lifestyle blog, Cider with Rosie, and how that came to be. It's a really gorgeous story. We talked about content planning, and Rosie shares some of her really simple, gentle tips. And we also talked about why we think it's harder to make it in blogging nowadays. And Rosie shares some really vulnerable feelings of how maternity leave was a stumbling block in blogging, as well as why Instagram stories became a total lifeline. If you want to hear that you can achieve amazing things without doing what everybody else does, or why being a badass business planner doesn't always have to be the way, this one's for you. Hi, Rosie. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
How are you?
Great. Thank you. Really good.
For anybody that doesn't know you, could you introduce yourself and just tell us a little bit about your blogging journey so far?
Yep, sure. So my blog is called Cider with Rosie, and I set it up when I was, gosh, I think I was 22 or 21. So it was back in 2012. So it's been a long time now. So it feels like it's been ages that I've been blogging. And I set it up when I'd not long lost my grandma, who is so special and important to me. And she had kept diaries all her life. And I remember kind of reading through them when she'd not long passed away, and kind of thinking how amazing it was that she'd just kept these little journals of just like things like, oh, went over to see the girls, looked after the girls today, went out for lunch with my with mum, and all these things. And it was such an amazing thing to read through, just the moments that had made her happy. And I thought, oh, I kind of want to do that, but I knew I wouldn't keep to it if it was just like a paper diary. Yeah. Because I've never been able to keep writing a diary on paper. I've always kind of got bored of it. Yeah. And I just discovered blogging when it was in my second year of uni, and I thought, oh, okay, maybe I'll give that a go. And I set it up, and I think at the time beauty blogs in the UK were massive, but there was hardly anyone doing lifestyle in the UK. And I kind of knew that you could make a job from it. And I was getting towards the end of uni and started sort of thinking, oh, I don't really know what I'm going to do next. And I thought, oh, maybe I can tie these two things in together and make a living from writing a diary just about what makes me happy and what brings me joy. And I did, really. So that's the kind of story of how I got started.
That's a really cool origin story. I haven't heard one like that before, that it actually
really
did start. Well, yeah, because I think we all start in a sort of journaly way, and I'm pretty sure the majority of bloggers start out, well, certainly back when we started blogging, not as a way to make money. You kind of start, make it your hobby. You don't really start with the intention of being like, I'm going to be a full-time blogger, just because I think I didn't really know that you could. So sorry, go on. Were you going to say something?
I think like for me, the Jason, my husband, well, my boyfriend at the time, was working for himself. And so I kind of was inspired by him, really, to just give it a go. And because I wasn't already working at the time, I was at uni. So obviously I had like bags of free time to like read a load of blogs and sort of start learning all about this industry that I found totally fascinating. And I just loved the idea of working for myself. And so, yeah, so I guess it was kind of, I suppose it wasn't like your usual way of like you say, it being a sort of sideline hobby and then it taking over. I always had the hope for it to make a living from it. But I think I was just lucky that I managed to jump in at the right time, so to speak.
How did it, so basically you came from uni into your job now as Cider with Rosie?
Yes. So the way that happened was, so like I said, I set it up in the middle of my second year of uni, or in the summer of my second year of uni. And then I ran the blog all the way through my third year of university. And I was working part time and obviously studying and writing dissertation and all that sort of stuff. And I just kept blogging, and it was like I wasn't earning anything from it at that point. It was just like a little sideline thing that I was doing and plugging away at and really enjoying. And then when I graduated from university, I sort of sat down with Jason and said, you know, look, I really want to give this a go. And we sort of agreed that I would give it until Christmas of that year, and see if I could start making an income from it. And I thought, if I've given it a good few months and nothing's come from it, then I'll sort of maybe just keep it as like a hobby and go and find something else to do instead. And I started to make money from it that year. So
How did you actually make money from it, if you don't mind me asking?
No, that's
fine. I think
people
always like to know. Everybody that listens to this is a blogger or a creative or Instagrammer, or, you know, and everybody always wants to know that, you know, the actual, how do people make money blogging?
Yeah, the ins and outs of it. I always get asked that question. looking back, it's changed a lot, actually, like over the past, how many years has it been? 5-6 years. Back when I first started to earn revenue from the blog, largely it was down to private ad sales. So back when sort of like blogger sidebar advertising was huge, that was like my biggest revenue source for probably a good couple of years. And I really enjoyed that, actually, because I loved finding different blogs to read, and I'm really nosy, so I really enjoyed, like, I would run like a monthly feature interviewing. Interview different bloggers, and that was like the main way I made money, but also through collaborating with brands, running like sponsored content. Now I definitely, the main way I make money is through sponsored Instagram, and I think the collaborations have got slightly more involved, I'd say. I think that's like down to a couple of things, down to the fact that like my audience has grown, and perhaps there's more like value there for a brand to be working with me. But also I think that the industry has grown loads. So now, instead of it just being kind of, you know, can we pay you to feature this product in a post? Now it'll be like, a whole campaign, perhaps like a trip or a, you know, a project, with all social included, like Instagram stories, Instagram posts, Twitter, like all these different things that just, you know, 5 years ago were just really just finding their feet. So now I'd say that like it's the sponsored content is a lot more of an involved project every time it comes in.
Which I think, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I imagine that's much, much better, because you have a daughter, you probably don't want to be doing 5 sponsored posts a month.
Yes.
It's so much better and so much more valuable to have those big long-term kind of collaborations with brands that you actually use, as opposed to having to make up your income and pay the bills by doing sponsored posts. I'm speaking for myself here, because...
Yeah, totally.
I started out the same way, and the majority of my money, my measly income, would come from ad sales. Not in the way that you did them. It would be like, you know, Google ads and Amazon associates and rubbish like that.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah. Yes, I used to do that as well. And I would probably like once every 3 months, I'd get maybe like £80 from Google. And like, there we go. There's my pocket money for the next one.
But yeah, like back in the day, it didn't seem like there was much else that you could offer or earn money from, and it is much better now that people are looking at things in a much more holistic way. And bloggers have become influencers. So talking about kind of you growing your blog? Was there anything you specifically did to grow it? I know you said you were really lucky, but I think there's more to it than luck.
Yeah, I think I always tried to be very involved in the whole community. So back when I first started, I think the done thing was to get involved in Twitter chats. Do you remember those? Hashtag LBloggers, hashtag Beauty Bloggers, all these different hashtags. And then I think it would be like a Sunday night at 8 o'clock. And I used to carve out that time and I would just sit down and just get involved on Twitter. And, you know, at the end there would be a sharing of links.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know if these things still exist anymore because I feel like I'm slightly more removed now because of being, you know, like a full-time mum. I don't have the time to dedicate to these things, but that was a great resource early on because it was a really good way to disconnect with lots of different bloggers at once. And it was a very I can't think of the word, but kind of all ships rise in high tide sort of thing. Everybody would share each other's blogs and would be very supportive of each other to grow. And I also used to do a lot of commenting. I used to comment on lots of blogs and read lots of blogs. So yeah, I think I was just always very very involved in the whole blogging community. And I think if you show yourself as a dedicated reader of blogs, perhaps that blogger will and comment a lot, and you know that blogger might click on your post one day and share something. And I think it's just an organic growth, but I think it feels so slow early on. It can be very disheartening because you know it's like a snowball effect, isn't it? The more followers you have, the more your content's likely to be shared.
So I think
I did advertise on some blogs. Yes, I do remember advertising on a couple of blogs, doing my own sidebar advertising. I think I advertised with Louise Pentland.
Sprinkle of Glitter.
Back in the day. Yeah, who's just had her lovely baby. And I can't remember. I advertised on a couple of other. I mean, I don't know if people really offer advertising.
I don't think they do. I did it early on. I advertised on someone else's sidebar, and I hadn't really nailed down my niche so much then, so it really did nothing for me. It was a really great way of, I mean, I definitely did get a little boost in traffic, but they didn't stick because I wasn't the right audience or the right topic, should I say. But I think people do but I don't know if it's done in the same way anymore. With commenting and linkies and
I mean, I don't know about you, but I think it's harder to grow nowadays.
Definitely.
Back, you know, sort of 3, 4, 5 years ago, I felt like my following was growing so fast and my traffic was brilliant. I mean, obviously a huge part of the fact that it's slower now for me personally is that I took best part of a year off really to adjust to becoming a mother. But I do think it is more difficult to grow. I think there's just so much content out there, it's more difficult to get seen and noticed. So I don't envy anyone who's kind of starting out now.
Yeah, I think it is. I agree with you. I think it is harder now. I think you have to be so much more savvy, because I think I understand when you say there was a bit of luck, because I would attribute, and I'm not a blogger in the same realm as you at all, but I would definitely attribute any of my traffic growth in the early days to a bit of luck.
Yeah.
Because, you know, being in the right place at the right time or, you know, whatever. Because you didn't have to be so savvy then. But now I think you do have to almost come into blogging with a bit more of a business strategy.
Yeah, definitely. And as much as I say, you know, I kind of wanted to make it a business right from the start, I was definitely just fumbling around, following my nose and just doing whatever I thought might be fun and worthwhile at the time. I definitely wasn't somebody who had spreadsheets and a marketing plan and a whatever. I was very, very kind of loose and casual about it.
Has that changed now?
Nope. I'm definitely not.
That's the impression that I get from you, in a good way.
Yeah. I think I've always wanted to be somebody who's got a really not strict marketing plan, but I don't know. I've tried to be that person who's like super duper on it.
Yeah.
But I'm not really. I just do what I enjoy, and you know, I think I've been lucky to be able to do that. I've always had brands that I've wanted to work with, and it's been amazing to kind of tick off some brands from that list. And I think I'm starting in the last sort of few months, I've wanted to get back into a better blogging schedule, and I hope that it's becoming a bit more obvious that I'm like back in the game a little bit, because I think for months I just would maybe post like once or twice a month, and I felt like I was barely there. I was dipping my toe in the water every now and again, but I've kind of got my mojo back, and I'm sure, I don't know whether you felt the same, but like when I was pregnant with Ottilie, and then when she was small, I just lost a lot of focus and motivation and creativity and inspiration, and it all just went by the wayside a little bit. But now that's really come back, and I'm really enjoying that and kind of like trying to use it as much as I can, because so great to get to found my mojo again. So I'm trying to capitalize on that, and I've got like a posting schedule again, and you know, much more of a plan about what I want to be doing over the next few months and where I want to take my content. So I suppose it has changed in that I'm a little bit more clear. I'm definitely not somebody who's got a you know, business managerial head naturally to them.
When you say kind of knowing where your content is going to go, like, I'm always really interested in content planning, and I've just done it this year. I am a spreadsheet person. I'm not super savvy. Well, my background is not creative. Well, it is kind of creative, but my job out of uni was in merchandising. So it was number crunching.
Wow.
It was creative in the sense that I was working with product and planning product to be on the shelf and all that sort of stuff.
Wow.
But it was all about spreadsheets and budgets and maximizing profit for whatever company I worked for. I love spreadsheets. I love spreadsheets so much. Honestly, I've got a spreadsheet for everything.
That's amazing. You'd get on with my husband.
I must be the only person who actually enjoys doing their profit and loss every month.
Oh god, yes, that's something else I've never really sat down and done. I would always get to the end of the tax year and be like, oh, I've made money, that's cool.
Whereas,
you know, I know some people are like, you know, they've got it down to, you know, they know exactly where they're at with the year all the time, and for me it's always a bit of a nice surprise if I've made money.
Content planning. I have a content plan now where I basically plotted out roughly for the year roughly where I want things to go. I obviously flex that every week if I want to, but there's a Notting Hill Carnival post, like going to Notting Hill Carnival with a baby, that I didn't write at the time because I'm lazy, and I was like, oh, I should slot that in for, you know, August before Notting Hill Carnival, as opposed to just banging it out right now where it's completely irrelevant. Actually, I found that really helpful for kind of staying on track. If I know what I need to write next week or the week after, whatever, I found it super useful. How what's your kind of plan?
Well, I think the way that I've always kind of planned it, like from the week that I started writing my blog, I sat down and made a list of the topics that I wanted to cover. And I think back then it was like, fashion, food and recipe content creation, like arts and culture, which I've not really done that much on, funny enough. I can't remember what else was on the list, but I've always had like a kind of little running list in my head of the topics that I want to cover, and I still do really to a degree. So when I'm like planning content for the week or for the month or whatever, I kind of will like mentally go through that list of content, topics rather, that I want to cover on the blog, and just try and make sure that I've got like a little bit of everything. So now the topics are still like a bit of fashion, but mostly, of course, motherhood, lots of like sort of gardening and growing my own produce and seasonal eating, things like that, and food and recipe creation, and so those are the sort of like main topics of bits that I like to cover, and you know, sort of like home and lifestyle sort of stuff as well. So I will kind of make sure that I've got like an even spread of those topics through the month, because you know, I know not everybody wants to read like back-to-back stuff about my daughter, so that's kind of how I plan it. So I'll usually like sit down and write down a list of how much content I want to produce over the month, and just jot in some ideas really. So I'm quite like loose and organic about it.
That's a really good way of planning content.
Well, I find it works for me, and it kind of keeps me like, you know, it's not too structured, because I find, you know, sometimes I'll think, right, I'm going to shoot an outfit post and then the weather's rubbish, or, you know, I just can't manage it. So then, you know, I'm able to just think, oh, okay, like, what was the last thing I posted? Okay, it was maybe something a bit like about motherhood. Okay, maybe I'll do some food next or something else. So, you know, it kind of keeps me quite flexible. Yeah. And I also have always loved kind of plotting the seasons on the blog. So one of my favorite series that I ever did was I think it was called Try This in Winter, Try This in Spring, like, you know, Try This in whatever the season was. And I created a post, like a couple of posts per season, with ideas for you know, seasonal living. So in the spring, I think it was, I can't remember what it, oh, in the autumn, it was like taking a hot chocolate out and having like a hot chocolate picnic on a dog walk. And in the spring, like visiting an art gallery, and you just, you know, nothing like super groundbreaking, but I just really enjoy, you know, going with the seasons. I love watching the seasons through the year. And so now, for 2018, the kind of backbone of the blog, in terms of the sort of seasonal content, is going to be growing food, which I'm really excited about, because now we moved in November, and we moved to a farm, which I keep getting questions about this. We're not running the farm. We don't manage a farm.
I'm so jealous of your new house though.
It's a lovely place to live. We're so happy. And it's such a change from our old house. I think our old house could have fitted in the kitchen of the new house. And I think we were like bursting at the seams of the old place with a baby and two dogs. So, yeah, we were definitely due a bit of a space upgrade. Now I've got so much garden space, it's a bit overwhelming, really. But I'm hoping to produce like monthly content, sharing what I'm growing and what some ideas for the garden. So
exciting, that side of things, because I remember when, I don't know if it was last year, see, this is where I show my fangirling, when I remember you saying, every year I say I'm gonna grow stuff, and then Jason laughs at me because I don't. And so I was like, I do the same thing. I don't have a garden, obviously, but I, you know, sometimes I'll be like, I'm going to get some herbs. I'm going to grow this. I'm going to grow that. But you actually did it. And then suddenly you're like, oh, yeah, I've just ordered like 25 tons of compost. And I'm just going out to sow some seeds.
I think the thing that I spent most money on in 2018 is actually compost, and I'm not joking. Like, because we had I'm not exaggerating when I say a lorry load, we had seven cubic meters delivered.
Oh my god,
I can't remember, it was a bonkers amount. It's so much. It was like tons of compost delivered just before Christmas, and then it wasn't even enough, like it wasn't even halfway to being enough. So then I had to go and order another 80 bags, 80 liter bags from the garden center, and there's still another six bags sat in my car because I went and bought some more the other day.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's a bit bonkers, but yes, I do. I really clearly remember writing about how like Jason was like, oh yeah, you'll never do it, because I like, until now I'd always, well, up until last year, I'd always been like the one in our house who would like kill the Christmas poinsettia by like mid-December. Mm. And I, you know, I've always been like so naff at keeping basil going and just rubbish. Like I've never been good at keeping plants alive. And then when I was like, oh, I'm going to grow some courgette, he was like, okay, yeah, see how we get on with that. and then, you know, we had so many, I literally was like flinging them over the garden fence at our neighbours. Like, please just take them off my hands. I've got so many. Yeah, and just everything grew, and I was as shocked as anyone, but it's so addictive. Like, I absolutely love it. Like, I'm right now looking, I'm sat in my living room and I'm looking at like chili seedlings and potatoes that are currently sprouting on the window ledge. Oh, so it's very exciting.
I can't wait to have a garden.
Oh, it is lovely. I do feel lucky to have one.
So talking about some of the stumbling blocks, because we always like to talk about stumbling blocks in the podcast, because I feel like we all have them, and the bigger the blogger, the more people like to think that they haven't ever had any stumbling blocks. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's really great to hear when someone's had them.
Yeah.
What were yours?
Well, I mean, it sounds awful, but like becoming a mum.
yeah.
A bit like that sounds horrible. That sounds like it's a negative thing, and it's not, and I don't think it has to be a negative thing, but you know, adjusting to becoming a mother, I found a huge career-wise, a huge kind of stumbling block really, because not only was it kind of tricky to just learn how to manage this new role and keep this little person alive and keep the house looking like relatively not like a bomb had gone off by 4 o'clock every day, trying to fit in work. And I think also because of what I blog about my life, I don't know, I found it hard to know what to blog about when my day was just keeping somebody's tummy full, and I, you know, was sleep deprived to the most bonkers level. Like I look back and I'm like, how did I function? And I just, I found that really tricky. So that was a huge adjustment, and going through the whole adjustment to becoming a mother and how to work around that. I still look back at, I look at other bloggers who seem to just have their baby and you know, 2 weeks later they're back to posting, and I think, how did you do that? I absolutely marvel at anybody who manages to keep up a posting schedule, and hats off to them. But yeah, I found that really hard, and I think, you know, I just found it difficult to juggle that, and it was definitely not easy for me, but you know, I feel like I'm back there almost, which is exciting. And I Jason and I've made the decision recently to split the childcare more evenly, so it's going to be you know, a bit more of like a 50-50 divide between his sort of career and mine, which I'm really pumped about, because up until now I've had I started having like 1 day a week childcare probably 2-3 months ago, so now it's going to be a bit more even, which I'm really excited about. But anyway, sorry, we're talking about stumbling blocks.
Yeah, no, but that's really interesting, because I know a lot of people listening to this either have babies, are pregnant, thinking about having children, and that is something that I feel exactly the same as you. It's a huge stumbling block, and I really underestimated how difficult I would find managing being self-employed and, you know, having maternity leave, and also coming back to making the decision to when to come back to work, because it's a bit how long is a piece of string, when do you come back? And
yeah, totally.
I was talking to Kate of A Playful Day yesterday, and we were talking about how tough it is with, you know, if I did have statutory maternity pay,
but yes, so did I.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's fine, it tides you over.
Yes.
And you get your 10 keeping in touch days, but it's very unclear of how you can manage them. And when you're somebody who works online, and I had just made I had a few really great relationships with editors, and I didn't want to lose those relationships.
Yeah.
It was so stressful. But then as soon as you decide to go back to work full time, then everything's gone. There's no, it's just kind of feast or famine, isn't it?
Yeah, totally.
And it's not even a feast, it's like snack to famine.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's hard.
And yeah, no, I mean, it's really, really hard, and I underestimated it a lot. But it's great that you're coming into a season where your mojo is back and you're going to have more childcare, you're going to have more free time. And
yeah, I'm really excited about it. But I think, like, you know, it's important to I don't know, be okay with how hard it is as well for the first few months. And I think, you know, it's easy to look at somebody else's situation and compare and say, oh yeah, but they're managing X, Y, and Z, and I'm only, you know, if I have a shower, I feel great about what I've achieved in the day, and you know, I'm not working very much. And I did that a lot, and I felt guilty a lot of the time. But it's, you know, I think we need to cut ourselves a bit of slack, don't we? That, totally. You know, we're going through like the hugest adjustment that you can possibly imagine. But yes, I am really, I'm really excited about, sorry, just keeping the dog quiet. I'm really excited about having a bit of, you know, time to work. Yeah. Just, it's exciting.
Did you find that Instagram stories was helpful? Because even though you weren't blogging, and so I wasn't obviously reading as many blog posts from you, I completely I don't feel like you had a year off in a way.
Oh, really?
Because I was always following you on Instagram and Instagram stories, especially Instagram stories, really. Do you feel that from your point of view that helped you feel kind of still in the loop?
So yeah, totally. Instagram stories definitely was like my lifeline social media. Like, it kept me connected.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, my engagement on that has always been really good. And it was kind of like a nice little boost at a time when I felt like it sounds a bit melodramatic, but I felt quite irrelevant, like in kind of professionally, for a good few months when Otty was small. And yes, definitely that kind of, it did just keep me connected. And it was, I've touched on this a couple of times on Instagram stories recently, but I've had a lot of questions over the past year or so about whether I'm going to go back to doing YouTube. And I'm definitely, definitely don't have any plans to, because I don't know. There's just something about it that I just don't get on with. I think it's like, I find with YouTube, there's almost too much time to think about how you look and what you're saying, and is that angle right, and does my chin look big, and blah blah blah. And I just didn't get on with it. I just found I got so self-conscious, and I would edit myself down to a degree where that was just, I don't know, I just felt like I was just taking away everything about myself just to try and you know, not say anything stupid or offensive, or I don't know. I found it just made me so completely self-conscious.
Yeah.
And whereas Instagram stories, it's so soundbitey and it's so immediate, and I love the feedback. I don't feel self-conscious on Instagram stories. I feel just really kind of like free to just chat about anything, and my audience are always really, really responsive and up for a chat, and great for like advice and feedback, and I think it's such a brilliant medium. And it's so funny because when Instagram stories first launched, I had just got to grips with Snapchat, and I was like,
same.
It's funny, isn't it? I was like, I am not doing Instagram stories, I'm not learning another social media, I'm not doing it. And then I deleted Snapchat after like a month of having Instagram stories up and running.
And I remember saying at the time, I was like, well, that's not gonna work. Snapchat's amazing.
Totally. And now I can't even remember how Snapchat works. I'm all about Instagram stories.
Yeah, 100%. I love it. I absolutely love it. And I find it just a really great medium for engagement. I think people don't utilize it enough, because you know, everybody whinges on about the algorithm and nobody can see my posts and all the rest of it. But I know that I get some really solid feedback from my quite small audience, and I get a lot of traffic from Instagram, which is mental because I only have one place that I can put a link. I don't have the swipe up.
Right.
But even if I use a Bitly link and just write it, I get a big chunk of traffic from that, which is, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. Mental. That just shows how powerful using, when you use the right medium for you, because I know that YouTube is absolutely the right thing to do for some people.
Yeah, totally. And I felt like I initially started doing it because I felt like I was missing a trick because, you know, I was getting more and more emails from brands saying, can you offer, like, do you offer video content as well as blog? And I thought, oh, well, I'll give it a go and see. And the feedback, I mean, you know, I don't mean to sound big-headed, but I always got really nice feedback on YouTube and I think fairly good engagement given that it was like a small you know, start out channel. But I just, it just wasn't for me. It wasn't for me at all.
Thank you so much for being part of the podcast. Where can everybody find you online?
So my website URL is www.siderwithrosie.com. Instagram, I am at siderwithrosieblog, and Twitter, I am at siderwithrosieb.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Oh no, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, Lucy.
Thanks for listening to what she said. I really appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and if you did, please think about leaving me a 5-star rating and a review if you have time. This really helps other people find the podcast and means that Apple don't hide me in their vaults. If you fancy joining my small but perfectly formed bunch of podcast fans for chit chat on Facebook, head to facebook.com/groups/whatshesaidpodcast and come and join us.